Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing great today, too. Thanks for asking. And thank you all for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about the biblical code for garments referred to in the Bible in order to grasp the idea of spiritual identity. In this show, we will discuss the discernment between personal sense and true spiritual identity and how this is explained as avidya in Kriya Yoga. Listen as we explore the major differences between modern religion and true spiritual science. From Luke 9:29, "And as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistering." Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and display only the divine qualities. Swami, I see the title of today's show is White Raiment of the Mystical Eye. How about a brief summary as to what that title should mean to us?
Yeah, white is the presence of all color, appearing as one color, which becomes a perfect symbol for spirit. Spirit is the all in all united into one identity, one harmonious being, no longer refracted or divided. And raiment is the garment or the first house in astrology, which for most is the personal sense of self. But the mystical eye is the divine ego, realization of the one perfect divine life.
So when you're talking about that first house in astrology, why do you say it's for most means the personal sense of self?
In traditional astrology, the first house is the physical body. It's the persona of an individual. And so it's how we see ourselves. And for most of us, we see ourselves and we identify with the physical form or we identify with the mental concept. But what we're learning is even those that think they do, it's very difficult to identify yourself as the one spirit. And it's really not until we can accept spiritual identity and live in the knowledge of that spiritual awareness are we able to demonstrate the presence of the divine creation. And the reason I say for most of us is because I found it very difficult to find anybody who seems to be demonstrating divine law with scientific certainty. And so I think the reason is we think we're spiritual, but we don't know this truth. And so because we are still working with a mind that can't bring forth the divine image, we're unable to demonstrate the presence of the divine creation.
So the phrase mystical eye and divine egoism might be phrases that maybe our listeners haven't been exposed to. So could you take a moment and just explain to us what mystical eye means?
Yeah, that's why we started to do this show, is living from the many in a divided consciousness and the changing conditions of a personal mentality is a far cry from spiritual identity, the white raiment of the mystical I. Here we make a distinction in the use of the personal pronoun I and open it up with different applications. We use I as a personal pronoun to represent the personal sense of self, me, you, as material appearances. But I can be used to represent the impersonal, infinite spiritual self, the one divine life, the divine egoism of Ames Knoll, because this becomes one of the major misconceptions and confusions that are found in trying to interpret the Bible today, where Jesus says things like, before Abraham was, I am. And so people interpret that I am as Jesus, when in fact it is really the Christ that is saying the I am, the impersonal spiritual sense of selfhood, the I that is the I of all being. And this is what we want to accept as our identity, that I am the infinite spiritual selfhood.
So the phrase divine egoism just means the divine spiritual self. Am I thinking about that correctly?
Right. The one life, looking at itself, as itself, of itself, to itself. This is a concept that we really can't grasp with our mortal mind, with our material senses, because we're moving from what is dualistic, rational, into the realm of absolute, the realm of wholeness. Spirit is whole. It's one. There's nothing that ever needs to be added to it or taken away from it. And so a lot of times we use terms like you'll hear a lot in the spiritual community, that's ego, and ego is a bad thing because it's a reference to the personal sense of I, which then creates interference with the possibility of the one perfect divine life. And what we're learning is you can't be both. And so it's one or the other. And if it isn't the impersonal spiritual sense of selfhood, then there is a belief in something other than the one life. That's what interferes with spiritual law, the law of the perfect divine creation that is going on right here, right now, outside of our mortal sense of awareness.
So it sounds like you're describing what avidya in Kriya Yoga means.
Avidya means without truth. They interpret it as ignorance. Truth is there is but one life. It's perfect. It's whole. When we are conscious of this divine principle, then creation is perfect. But when we are unconscious of one perfect divine being, then we are without truth. And oftentimes what happens with it, we mistake the false for the real, the impermanent for the permanent. And a lot of it is going to come down to, how am I thinking? Am I still thinking with my material senses? Or have I achieved the fifth stage in yoga, which is pratyahara, sense withdrawal? Have I risen above duality, the belief in two powers? And am I now perceiving things in unity, in the unified consciousness, the one perfect life? Because that's the truth. But if I'm not, then I am living without the truth, which is avidya.
So it sounds to me we have to step out of this avidya. We have to come to the realization of this truth. And then from there, then we'll be able to take this vertical leap that you talk about.
Right. And then what we find, though, it's not quite as simple as that sounds. Because once you come out of what is visible and tangible, physical identity, your physical body, you then go into the realms of mind, and mind can really entangle you. And so we've made a shift. We've gone from physical to mental, but we haven't gone far enough. We haven't gone from mental to spiritual, because as you educate your thought up to spiritual apprehension, you start to see the physical world is a mental image, but the more divinely mental, the more harmonious and indestructible it will start to appear. But when we mistaken thought for spiritual idea, we're still in that cycle of death and rebirth. We're still in the belief in two powers. We're still working with duality, which is a divided consciousness. And then what we're learning is spirit is a demonstrable principle. It is a law. And so if you are conscious of the divine creation, then it must have a profound effect on what is appearing in your material senses. And so now we have a litmus test. You can start to prove if what you are calling spirit is spirit, because if it is, it must demonstrate. Because my experience has been, religion still leaves you off in the realms of belief and theory and concept, but it doesn't take you far enough for what in yoga they call liberation, freedom, freedom from this law of karma, freedom from this belief, I am a finite mortal being with an expiration date. And so it's no longer acceptable for me to say I'm spiritual. I want to be able to prove that. Spirit testifies with deeds, not words.
So Swami, you started talking about modern religion and true spiritual science. Would you say demonstration would be another one of those major differences between the two?
Yeah, from my perspective, it is the major difference between the two. And when I started to expose myself to Mary Baker Eddy's discovery of Christian Science, when she had her revelation and she was proving the presence of the divine creation and brought it to the other denominations of Christianity, it was met with complete resistance. And a lot of it is understandable because it really makes you accountable. And we're accustomed to religion being outside of or beyond the scrutiny of even corporeal science.
Well, Swami, you had mentioned the word ego before, and I believe we have some quotes by Mary Baker Eddy regarding the ego. Would you repeat that for our listeners?
Yeah, coming back to the proper use of the personal pronoun I do like what Mary Baker Eddy said in Science and Health, What's Key to the Scriptures, on page 204. When will the ages understand the ego and realize only one God, one mind, or intelligence? And then to fine-tune that statement that she makes, we have from Addresses by Bicknell Young on page 6 and 7. I'll read it. When Mrs. Eddy first began to establish this movement, she used to say, God is the mind of man, more dogmatically than she does now. Now she explains it more. Not understanding that statement, some of her students, not perceiving that principle is mind, began to misinterpret and taught students to say, I am God. They perceived that there was but one mind and that mind was their mind. But they humanly wanted to claim divine power in such a way as to exercise omnipotence for their own selfish ends. End of quote. The proper use of the pronoun I is important here because I am God is correct when understood to be the impersonal, infinite spiritual self. But it's blasphemy when thought to be the personal, mortal, human self. And so when reading the Bible, there are certain times when Jesus says, I am, and he's making reference to the divine mind, and there are other times when he's making reference to his personal sense of self. We have to be educated in order to make that distinction, because to confuse the two is avidya in yoga.
Well, we're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments. Yoga Theory 2 is a unique and revolutionary practice and forum designed to facilitate the growth process in human development. Apotheosis is a real experience and has an evidence procedure. You cannot lead someone to permanent change by doing for them what they must do themselves. Personal accountability and responsibility are the foundation of Kriya Yoga Theory 2. You must be engaged and devoted. Prana power brings virtue to overcome fear, wisdom to overcome ignorance, purpose to overcome selfishness, enthusiasm to overcome laziness. Kriya Yoga is a path of action, knowledge, and devotion. These sessions are a celestial positioning system to guide the individual into union with the divine. For more information or to sign up for your next session online, go to www.ipdtransform.com. Namaste. Welcome back. For those who are just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami, I'd like to talk about the verse that we have in the summary from Luke 9:29, and I'll read it again. And as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistering. Wondering if maybe you could break that down for us.
Yeah, I think for Jesus and the apostles, prayer was probably something much different than most of us today are socialized to think it is. Prayer is communion with the divine and the effects that that would have on your appearance. Because in order to pray with the divine, you must be in spiritual identity. And making the transition from personal sense to spiritual selfhood has its requirements. I really like what Mary Baker Eddy said in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures on page 167. The scientific government of the body must be attained through the divine mind. End of the quote. And this is more in sync with what we taught in Kriya Yoga as far as apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine, the metamorphosis, where you go from the larvae state to the chrysalis phase to the adult. But it is a process, and it does have an evidence procedure. And I also like what Herb Fitch said in La Jolla Series Class 9A, and he states, I'll read it, "Now we learn something most unusual as we go deeper into the acceptance of divine self. Your divine self can never move your physical body. I know it sounds strange. Your physical body, though, is moved always by world mind. It's the world mind that makes your heart beat and controls your brain. Your divine self has nothing to do with your physical form, and that's why hearts fail and bodies deteriorate. Your divine self moves only your divine body, your immortal soul body. And as you bring your beliefs in conformity with divine belief, you are released from control of the world mind. And then divine self moves your divine body. But this appears in the appearance world as your improved condition. You see, it's the step that's missing. All human activity functions without divine ordination. But when this happens, when you move out of thought to let divine mind move your divine body, you move under grace in all things. And the divine body movement within you makes the outer physical movement of your human body. This is the meaning of the Father worketh hitherto and I work. The one divine life stream performs its perfection, independent of the physical world, and your spiritual body walks free of the material grossness of the sense mind and its false powers." End of the quote. And so more and more you start to see the physics of spirituality. Like attracts like. We can't be in a mortal, finite sense of self and have access to the infinite spiritual body.
Well, Swami, you said earlier that making the transition from personal sense to spiritual selfhood has its requirements. And then also, you just recited that Herb Fitch says, move out of the thought to let divine mind move your body, and so on. So it sounds like there's things that we have to do to be able to allow this divine intervention to happen.
Yeah, it's a lot more difficult, I think, than the scientific government of the body must be attained through divine mind. Because if you don't know what divine mind is, most of us are individuated from the world mind. And so we live and move and have our being at this mortal sense level of awareness. And then Jesus says to Nicodemus, unless we are born again of water and the Spirit, we'll never know heaven. And so this being born again of water and the Spirit, how do I stop thinking? How do I start knowing? And then what is it that I have to know? And this is all stuff we're working on and putting this together because it is a practice. It is a process. And it does have an evidence procedure. If you are conscious of the divine creation, then what you experience in your material senses must have divine qualities.
Now, is that part of the scientific government of the body?
See, the physical body is a diagram of the mind. And like Herb said, it's world mind. The body is never the truth. The body is a thought about the truth, which is the divine creation. And so the body becomes a barometer. We can use the physical body to give us clues as to what am I conscious of? Because if I am being individualized from the world mind, then my body will have these finite qualities. But at the same time, if I am individualized from divine mind, then my body must have divine qualities. And that's why we use healing as an indicator of what I'm conscious of. Now, we also know that, quote unquote, healing can happen mentally. You can change finite bad to finite good by just changing your thoughts and belief. But we also know that healing isn't the goal of divine science. But if you're not demonstrating the presence of divine law with scientific certainty, which means that you're not healing the sick or reforming sinners or raising the dead, then you're not even at the base camp of divine science.
So it sounds like healing is the byproduct of this divine understanding.
All healing is the revealing of the divine creation. The divine creation is right here, it's right now, it's perfect. And our awareness of that has a profound effect on what is appearing in our material senses. But how we're thinking with our material senses has absolutely no effect on the divine creation. The divine creation is going on. God is running a perfect universe right here, right now, and there isn't anything that we can do humanly to affect that. Because the human mental recreation, the mental universe of energy, is not the divine creation.
So, earlier when we were talking about the Luke verse and we were talking about praying, kind of reminded me of the prayer that Jesus gave his disciples, the Lord's Prayer. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the Lord's Prayer, giving new meaning to the statement, on earth as it is in heaven. Because when we shift identity to infinite spiritual body, we're absent from the physical body and we're present with the spirit. By stopping all influence from the mental physical world of energy, we create a siphon for the divine creative principle to take over without interference. But we also must be able to make this distinction that we're shutting off what we're calling mind, which basically can be our ability to form thoughts and opinions based on information that's coming through our material senses. We're stopping thinking, and in silence and in stillness, our mind is aware for the presence of divine mind. And the formula always remains the same. How we think is what we become. But when divine mind takes over the scientific government of your body, your being, and we're no longer hijacked by the world mind and its belief in two powers, we rise. We rise into an understanding that life is perfect. The divine creation is right here. It's right now. It doesn't need anything. It's perfect. And in that awareness of the divine mind, it will resolve things into thoughts and exchange the objects of sense for the divine idea. And this is what I think Luke was talking about when he makes reference to his countenance was altered and his raiment was white and glistering. And this is very different than what we're accustomed to working with, the level of thought and belief.
So, I mean, you stated earlier about when Jesus was talking to Nicodemus about being born again. I just want to have you make a distinction between born again in the religious sense and then born again, what we're talking about with this divine science.
Yeah, I think there are many interpretations of what Jesus was talking about when he said that. For a lot of us, we try and do this with mortal imagination as opposed to doing it with divine mind. Born again of the Spirit means accepting spiritual identity. And this is a complete shift in consciousness from finite, mortal, personal sense to impersonal, infinite, immortal spirit. We use the mortal mind to find divine mind, but once found, we must leave the mortal behind, put off the old man, and put on the white raiment of the mystical eye. And to know what it looks like when I have accepted spiritual identity. Because in spirit, there is no division, nothing but absolute life, pure, unadulterated consciousness. You're out of time, space, concept, belief, thinking. There's no human will or personal sense. You have found that place where your thought is the same as the divine idea. There's no trying, striving, struggling, planning, or seeking. You know the truth, and you let the divine omnipresence express itself through you as you. And as Mary Baker Eddy said, you live above corporeal sense and correct it. And this is what the Bible means when it says about Jesus that he spoke with authority. You're not speaking from a personal sense of self any longer. You are backed by the creative principle of the universe. You're that place where the divine creative principle is now expressing itself through you. And if it is not bringing forth the fruits of the divine qualities, then you really have to go back to the drawing board.
So I was wondering if you had any other thoughts about the requirements needed to make this transition from this personal sense to spiritual selfhood.
Well, you need union with the divine. We shift from being individuated from the world mind and under the jurisdiction of material law, a belief in two powers, the law of karma, to being individuated by divine mind, under the activity of the Holy Spirit, a belief in one power, the divine law of perfect creation. You're out of the many into the one. You have a proper sense of the infinite, and you are proving the presence of the divine creation.
Well, we do need to start breaking down our show for today, so listeners, be sure to visit the website, www.ipdtransform.com. Once you're on the homepage, you see the fading banner Blog Talk Radio. If you click that, that directs you to the Blog Talk Radio show catalog page. And then by clicking on the products tab, then online classes, directs you to all the classes that Swami has available. So with that, Swami, any other final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and display only the divine qualities. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.